This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of February 17th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Craig DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. One of the most important beats for the IBJ is retail real estate. We know from statistics for our online readership that our subscribers care intensely about the restaurants and stores that are either opening or closing in their neighborhoods. So here's a freebie for folks on the north side. I am going to give you a scoop. You know, the former Marsh supermarket space on 86th Street in Nora, this is one of the former Marshes where Aldi has taken half of the space and the other half is still empty. Well, the nation's largest retailer of beer, wine, and spirits, Total Wine & More, has filed an application with the state to open one of its superstores in that space. Now, this would be a big deal for the neighborhood under any circumstances, but in fact, it's a massive deal for the entire state. This is significant because Total Wine & More, which is based in Maryland, is the first alcohol retailer to test whether a recent Supreme Court decision will allow out-of-state liquor retailers to open stores in Indiana. Now, like more than a dozen other states, Indiana has a law in the books saying the owners of a liquor retailer, or at least most of the owners, must be residents of that state. But last year, the U.S. Supreme Court decided, in a challenge to residency requirements, that they are unconstitutional. So, here comes Total Wine & More, presumably looking to establish a big presence in a state long famous for protecting its local liquor interests. More out-of-state liquor retailers could be on the way, and potentially turn what has been a pretty provincial marketplace on its head. So, prior to an Alcohol and Tobacco Commission hearing on Total Wine's permit application, scheduled for March 2nd, I've asked IBJ investigative journalist John Russell to talk about his story in this week's paper and explain what it all means. John, thanks for making time for us today.
Glad to be here.
Tell me, this is something we don't always talk with reporters about. How did you find the story?
Well, we had been hearing in the newsroom that a big company might be heading this way. Over the years, a lot of them have expressed interest in entering Indiana. A few years ago, a chain from Chicago called Benny's wanted to enter the market, but they couldn't because of our residency requirement. And so it was just a matter of that requirement being struck down by the Supreme Court that you knew that something might happen. So my editor said, start looking for it. So I went into the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission's website, and I had the names of the top five largest liquor retailers in the country. So I just, you know, put them all in the search fields, and nothing came up. Nothing came up. I tried this way and that way. I finally figured out that it might be filed under another name. So I did a Google search with the string DBA Total Wine & More, because they're the biggest in the country.
Yeah.
And found out that in other states they had filed under names like Florida Fine Wines, Tennessee Fine Wines, Delaware Fine Wines. So I just put in Indiana Fine Wines, and it popped right up, their permit application. It didn't have a ton of information, but at least confirmed that they had filed something and they had a site selected.
That is brilliant. I mean, that is modern reporting right there. I mean, just slaving over a search function, trying to figure out how something has been entered.
It is. A lot of the stuff, people only know so much, your sources can only tell you so much, but when you see it on a piece of paper filed with a government agency, you know something is real and about to happen.
Yeah, that's like a great jackpot moment when you find that document. So to clarify my introduction, why haven't out-of-state operators been able to open packaged liquor stores in Indiana? Do we know how far back this goes?
I don't know how far back it goes, how long this law has been on the books. It's been a while, in some form or another, many years. And it's had the intended effect of, you know, protecting the local liquor industry here. It's apparently a powerful lobby, and they've managed to have the state legislature keep all the other outsiders away so they can have the market to themselves.
And Indiana is pretty well known for having like protectionist laws, especially for the liquor industry. But in this case, it really isn't an outlier. There are, what, at least 20 other states that have something similar?
They do. So we're certainly not alone. And Indiana's law has carved out exceptions over the years. So now that big pharmacies can sell liquor, grocery store chains can sell liquor, convenience stores can sell liquor. There are only two restrictions left before this Supreme Court decision, and that was for package stores that stand alone liquor stores and restaurants that sell less than $100,000 worth of food.
And then what specifically did the justices say in their verdict?
Well, they said it was unconstitutional by a 7-2 vote. It violated, I'm not exactly sure what part of the Constitution, but it discriminated against non-residents or outside residents from coming into the state. A 7-2 decision on this kind of conservative court is pretty remarkable, I think. So I think you're going to see a lot of new activity, not just in Indiana, but all these other 20-some states that had this same restriction on the book.
So does the Supreme Court's decision just automatically invalidate Indiana's residency requirement so any operator can just jump in and apply, or is other action necessary at the state level or in the courts?
That's a great question, and I don't pretend to be a lawyer, but the lawyers I've talked to say it would help if the legislature addressed this statute. It's part of the Indiana Code, and nothing has been addressed since then. You know, the Supreme Court struck it down last summer. I don't think there's been any effort in this session to address that. This hearing will take place on March 2nd before the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission. We'll see if the commission feels free just by the Supreme Court decision to go ahead and grant this permit.
That is really fascinating. So they're kind of rolling the dice in a way, Total Wine is.
Without knowing exactly how this legal process works, it's hard to say how much of a gamble it is. Total Wine is big. They're in numerous states. They've got 4,000 employees. They've got, according to Forbes magazine, $3 billion in annual sales. They're the 800-pound gorilla in the liquor industry nationally. They're number one in sales. I think they know when it's time to enter a market.
I would assume that they feel pretty confident, you know, at least making that first step and seeing what happens.
They didn't return calls to me, but I've read enough stories about what they've done in other states to know that they don't shrink from a challenge. They aggressively fight restrictions. They've had success on all kinds of fronts, from Sunday liquor sales to volume discounts to overturning bans on all kinds of various things that protect the local industry. So I'm surprised they haven't been in here challenging this up till now.
And these stores are really unlike the kinds of stores that we've seen in Indiana up to this point.
The typical liquor store in Indiana is something you can go in and walk around the entire perimeter in maybe a minute or two. They're small, like 4,000 to 6,000 square feet. This is about five times the size of what Indiana residents are used to when they go into a liquor store. They're 20 to 25,000 square feet. That's the size of a small supermarket.
Yeah, right. That's like an Aldi.
It's like an Aldi. It's like Aldi with five long aisles and with thousands and thousands of types of beer, types of wine, types of spirits. If you're really into trying new stuff, you can go in there. I guess that's their market, people who want to go in there and shop around.
And I would assume just through their size and the scale at which they operate, they can offer really good discounts.
They've been known for doing that, yeah. And there's no law in Indiana that you have to sell at a minimum price, unlike, say, cigarettes. You can sell for any price you want, so the bigger you are, the more aggressive you can be on, say, targeting, you know, having sale promotions on this or that from week to week. And even selling below cost, you can really hurt the small mom and pops who have been around for a long time and just don't have the kind of strength and the kind of money to be able to take that hit for very long at all.
If I'm a mom and pop operator, how do I feel about this?
You're probably feeling and have felt since the Supreme Court decision a little unsettled. There are hundreds of these smaller liquor stores around the state. There are also the next size up is the mid-tiers, the local chains, the Indiana chains like the 21st Amendment and Big Reds and Crown Liquors. They've got a little more power and dozens of locations. They could probably buy at volume discounts and maybe run sales promotions on occasion as well. But it's really tough to go up against a huge company like this, I would think.
That's what struck me as being interesting, too, is that if I'm a liquor store owner, maybe like a Big Red, I have maybe a dozen, say, or Big Red, I guess, has almost 60 liquor stores. I mean, that's not easy in Indiana, but I've put in a lot of time and a lot of money to establish that presence. And I did so with the expectation that it wasn't going to be easy for anybody else to come up and challenge me, that I would have some advantages in scale that not everybody else would have, and that I could reasonably expect to dominate where I am.
And you just have to wonder whether a superstore like Total Wine is going to be a category killer, like a Walmart or an Office Depot or, you know, a Lowe's. You know, they come into a market and a lot of the independents that have been around for decades and generations hang on as long as they can, but they don't all survive.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, we're back with the IBJ Podcast. I'm Mason King, and I'm talking this week with reporter John Russell about the potential for out-of-state liquor retailers to open stores in Indiana. Now, the space, speaking of Aldi, the space that it's going into is a former Marsh. It's been kind of fascinating to see what happens to all these different Marsh supermarkets since the bankruptcy. This is one of the occasions in which a smaller grocery has moved in to part of it, and this is going to be an Aldi. Occupying about, you know, I guess about 30,000 or 25,000 of the, what was probably 60,000 square feet. That was a typical Marsh. Is it Total Wine, because it's such a big operator, does it have a kind of history of going into unusual spaces like that?
Yeah, well, first of all, this Marsh isn't the biggest Marsh out there. It's more like 50,000 square feet. And I think the Aldi took up about less than half of that, maybe a third of that. So there's still more than 25,000 square feet left, which is about the footprint that Total Wine normally takes. And you're right that they do have a history of going into old, abandoned, or vacant, or troubled spaces. They have done a mix, actually, of new construction and then going into older, unused buildings. For example, in Louisville, they remodeled the former Staples office supply store. So, no, it's not a way out wacky idea that they're going to come in and remodel this space.
And I think, as we've kind of alluded to, the liquor store lobby in Indiana is extremely powerful. Is there any indication that it would try to preserve this requirement somehow, or maybe institute something just roughly equivalent on the legislative level?
These stores have been pretty quiet. None of the mid-sized chains returned my calls. I did talk to a few lawyers who are close to the industry, and some lawyers whose full-time practice or almost full-time practice is just handling alcohol permits, new permits, and, you know, these stores have to get their permits renewed every year, so that's a big business. And they were skittish to go on the record. You know, whatever they have in mind, they're keeping pretty close to themselves for now.
So the next step is the hearing.
The hearing, which, you know, these hearings are probably pretty important to the industry, to the applicants, to certain parties, but they're pretty low in the overall spectrum of things that draw a big crowd to a state government building.
Let me ask you, you're the IBJ healthcare reporter, of course, which is about a job and a half. How did you end up on this beat?
I'm not on this beat. My editor just said, I don't have anyone available right now. Can you take a look at this issue? And I was happy to, because it's always good to have a change and a new challenge.
All right. Well, let's check back after the hearing and see what happens.
Will do. Thanks, Mason.
All right. Take care. My thanks again to John. Since we recorded that interview, we have a little clarity on how the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission expects to handle the permit application from Total Wine. Its director of communications tells us that the commission is waiting for an advisory opinion from the Indiana Attorney General's office on how the Supreme Court decision applies to Indiana's alcohol laws. So keep an eye peeled on IBJ.com. We'll have more on that determination when it's available. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other stories I want to draw to your attention. IBJ's Lindsay Erdody takes a deep dive into the history and influence of Rod Ratcliffe, a pivotal figure in Indiana's casino and horse racing industry for more than three decades. But at nearly every turn, Ratcliffe or his companies or his associates have run into questions or concerns about their interactions with the public officials who make the rules for gaming in the state. You'll recall that the Indiana Gaming Commission is now investigating allegations that Ratcliffe's former racino business, Centaur Gaming, and one of its executives were involved in illegally directing campaign contributions to an Indiana congressional candidate. Also, in this week's paper, Susan Orr examines the prospects for the site of the Diamond Chain Company factory downtown. Diamond Chain's parent company plans to close the 102-year-old facility, which is dead center in the quadrant of downtown, including White River State Park, Victory Field, the Indiana Convention Center, and Lucas Oil Stadium. So, it's sitting pretty. You can see these stories in the issue of IBJ that you, of course, have delivered to your home or office or online at IBJ.com. And remember, folks, to get full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just click the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.